Oh, it's perilous times. And you know these verses, and you're thinking like, okay, people are going to be lovers themselves, covetous, boasters, proud. And you're thinking, them people, oh, that's horrible about them. It is. To me, it's like a picture of America. Beyond all that, it's like a picture of, well, the world. I could go painstakingly through these. I don't try to go through them in a brisk pace, but, and I could give you stats and examples, and but I think you'll be able to connect the dots very easily all by yourself. There's 19 of these qualifications, the wrong word, traits, examples of last time. So Paul in prison, this is the last thing he's going to write, and he's prophesying. What does Paul know about 2,000 years into the future? Paul's been dead almost 2,000 years. What did he know what it's going to be like in our time? The Spirit of God told him. And he gives him 19 characterizations, things that are going to be present in the last days. Know this, he says to Timothy. You won't be here, but this is what those people, Tim, you'll be long gone, but people in Kennebec Valley in 2,000 years from now, they're going to have to know this. And so he tells us, know this, that in the last days, perilous times shall come. Very famous verse, and we all know, we've all heard it before, probably. If you know any scripture, you probably have heard this. Perilous means dangerous. The only other time it's used in the Bible is when it's talking about the demoniac, that nobody could pass by him. It was too, it didn't use the word perilous, it used the word dangerous, but it says he's too untamed, too. You can't pass by that way. It wouldn't be very wise to do that. It's the same word that's used here, and it just means it's a very perilous or dangerous situation. The last days is going to be dangerous. And you're thinking, I don't see it. Well, hopefully I can describe it to you. Now, is this the last time? You say, you know, sometimes it looks like it is, and sometimes it doesn't look like it is. And how do I know? I think in last November, November of 2024, that's last, no, last November is only a month ago. 13 months ago, we were very close to perilous times. Somebody at a rally said, Jesus is Lord, and the candidate running for office said, yeah, you're in the wrong place. They were. Oh, they so were. There is groups of people who are trying to stamp out Christianity. If they get in power, brace for impact. It's not going to be pretty. Say we have a constitution, they run roughshod over it. Often. And that, we can put that right across the political spectrum. There are people who, Constitution, we don't care. I think we're closer to the last times than any of us think, than any of us would know. How do you know? Well, let me ask you this. Are people lovers of their own selves? Men shall be lovers of their own selves. And by the way, men and women. You have been on Facebook, haven't you? You have seen that, right? Let me tell you about me. I was out today, and I was I'm training for my half marathon, and this is what I had for breakfast, and this is my cat, and this is my and I just and please like all my stuff, please, right? And I just want to promote me, and I want to promote my cause, and I want to be an influencer. I want to show everybody, and I got a TikTok account, and I got Instagram, and I'm not having enough followers. I'll tell you that right now. And I'm getting, you know, it's pretty, and it's all about me. It was a song out, wasn't it? Just not too long ago. It's all about me, and it's all about me. That's America. And everyone's touting their own. You say, Adam, it's always been like that. Not to this degree. And I think lovers of self is the reason for all these other, most of all these other things. People are very, very, very into themselves. This is a narcissistic. You know, I think it was in the 70s, they called that the me generation. I grew up then. I think that's probably true, but not. No, today has far exceeded any me generation stuff from before. It just has. Like I say, I can give you examples and stuff, and I'm trusting you're able to see these things. Men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous. You know what I did? I wrote some notes down, because in the King James, the language changes a little bit. In 1611, we'd say this about this, and then here, like covetous, well, I covet, I want. You know what covet is? Maybe and maybe not. It specifically means lover of money. The word is a compound word, phileo, and then it means literally lovers of silver, or money is the idea. Covetous. Men will be lovers of their own selves and then lovers of money. Why? Well, because I'm so awesome. I should have all the money. I think it was back in the 60s. I was listening to somebody and they were saying, you know, this question was put to society, you know, kids of like high school and college age. What do you want to, what's your main objective? What's your goal? I want my life to be meaning, have meaning. I want it to mean something. I want it to be about something. I want to invent or cure or write the great American novel. I want to contribute. I want my life to have meaning and purpose. Today, same question is asked. What's your life supposed to be all about? Well, I want to make a lot of money. I think we see that. I don't think there's any question about that. So they're lovers of their own selves. They're lovers of money. They're boasters. And boasters here means boasters. They brag. Again, aforementioned Facebook. If I love me, you should too. Let me tell you what I've been up to. Let me tell you about me. Boasters. And they're proud. Proud means proud. This arrogancy, because if it's about me, let me tell you. And it should be about me. There's arrogance. I don't know how else to say proud. There's words that mean the same thing. But that's a problem. With being proud is my rights must never be trampled on. And I'm always right. I'm always correct. I can't back up. I can't say, that's a good point. I haven't thought of it that way. I couldn't do it. Proud people, they're never wrong. And that leads to other things too. Here, blasphemers, and they are. We're going to see if it's all about you and you're your own God, guess who's not God? The God. We can't have him being God. Obviously. Why? Because I am. And so blasphemy has to, you know, be part of the whole situation. It has to be part of the landscape. Say, it's always been that way. Yeah, never like this. Disobedient to parents. And now you look at this list and say, are you kidding me? So we were in a store yesterday and we were checking out. We were in a long line. And there was somebody throwing a fitty, little kid, you could tell by the voice. And I was talking to Suze, and I said, do you hear that? Go back and look, give him the look. She has this look that kids come out of it. I've seen it. I tell you, we were shopping one time, and this kid was, hey, man, just crying, and just like, and all of a sudden, like right mid-cry, stopped like a faucet being turned off, and I said, oh, Sue's found him. And so later I was talking, she goes, I just went over and I just gave him the look, you know, and I said, oh, I do know. Don't do it now. I'm not ready, you know. So I tell you this, I said, yeah, go give that kid the look. And she goes, oh, somebody needs a cookie. I said, he needs Mr. Spanky. What are you, getting soft on me or something like this? Kids have always been disobedient, saying, well, it's the end of the world because kids are disobedient because a kid yesterday was having a fitty. Listen, in Israel, it was a capital offense. And you remember, it's in I think it's in Leviticus. I'm not sure. I probably should have. We should look at it, but I'm just, you can go look it up if you feel like you want to. But a lot of you will remember this. Our son is disobedient. He's a drunkard. So we're not talking about a four-year-old having a fitty, okay, when we're talking about a drunkard. I don't know many drunk four-year-olds who just can't control themselves and every day get up and, you know, looking for the bottle or whatever, their drug of choice. We're talking about, obviously, somebody who comes of an age where, you know, I'm just not listening to parents anymore. That is a sign of the times. And what I'm looking at is the breakdown of the family. Families aren't, you know how many children go to bed every night without two parents in the home? And I'm not trying to make people feel guilty. I'm just saying, like, you know, think about like June and Ward Cleaver and, you know, Wally and the Beaver there. That is nice on TV. We see it, we say, oh, we even like Eddie Haskell compared to all the stuff we see nowadays. Do you think Eddie Haskell went to church, his parents dragged him or something on Sunday? I kind of had an idea, you know. He was all, you know, flattery and things of that. But it was a family, a normal, you know, dad worked, mom stayed home and kept house. She worked too, but it was a different situation. It was a different time. And the way, it's not like that anymore, is it? It's a different ball game out there. It's a whole different day. We don't have a two-parent society very often at all. Our families are made up of, you know, mom has gone to live with grandma and she's got a kid and two or three kids by two or three different men, and the family is not an intact, it's messed up. Now, you're saying, Adam, don't preach out of both sides of your mouth. You're saying we don't want to have abortion either. We don't. And so for single moms who have made a mistake and trying valiantly in the face of everything that's still trying to make go of it and stuff like that, applaud. And we can step in and help them and do a wonderful thing. I get all that. And we should. I'm not trying to blame or lay guilt on anybody. I'm just trying to show you it's the family, because you know at Machias yesterday they had a seminar on marriage, and it was very, very well attended. And Aaron was saying that all the trouble children showed up. You know, a lot of times you have a thing on marriage and all the people who are very happily married attend, and all the troubled children weren't there. And he said no, it wasn't like that at all. He said it was a real blessing. Travis Carey had one that we attended, and it was because we're like that, because our marriage is on the rocks, and it's just been hanging on by a thread, right? No, I think we got a good thing going, but we like to always learn, and always, there's always a place where you can step up your game, you can take the next step, and Travis was saying that was a real, like a lot of, you know, people came to me and said, yeah, I realized I wasn't being the husband I could, or a wife saying, yeah, he's really changed. He's leading us in prayer now, and all kinds of good things are happening. And why is this? Because Satan knows you break up the family and you break up the country. He's not stupid. He's been at this a long time. Why? Nah, I could go on this for a long, long time. Disobedient to parents, let's move on. Unthankful, unholy, unloving, and unforgiving. These are the uns, but they don't all say that. Unthankful means unthankful. It's common courtesy, but people don't say it much anymore. Why? Because they think they deserve. It was funny to me during the government shutdown to watch people it used to be called food stamps. What's it called now? SNAP. And they were saying like how we owe them and we should be, and because they always get the most ignorant person on there to say the most ignorant things, and I understand that. They're trying to make their case and stuff, but I was appalled at how many people think that we're supposed to bring up your children. And it's not like, oh, thank you. I'm really down and out right now, but I'm struggling, but I'm trying to make ends meet. And in the interim, we really appreciate you stepping up and helping out. No, you owe us. And to this whole society, we owe you a living. There's no thanks. Thanks for providing the opportunity. No, just here, fill this, and shut up. That's what you're supposed to do. It's unthankful. Now, you think I'm against SNAP, or you think I'm against some sort of assistance or unemployment or welfare. I'm not against anything. Some people really in desperate situations, and they need that. And that's why I've been on unemployment before. The people I work for, they pay unemployment insurance. Oh, I will admit it's been a lot of years, but I've received, and in that interim before, you know, you're between jobs or you're, you know, you haven't gone to school, you haven't made your trade, you haven't fixed, and you're struggling and you need help at the beginning. I get that. And I'm happy to do it, but we don't owe you a living. Nobody owes. And there should be some, I don't know, just some thankfulness. They don't say thanks in a store when we buy stuff, and even if they own the store. They're just unthankful. It's characteristic of our society. Unholy means unholy. Any questions? Well, if they're blasphemous, they're not going to be holy, are they? Holy means to be set apart for God. Sanctified is the idea. Okay? I'm set apart from me, and I'm God, and the whole universe revolves around me. Why would holy enter into it? And that's what we see. Without natural affection, this is unloving. They don't have any. They're unloving. Again, what is love? Self-sacrifice. God so loved the world that he have a warm fuzzy. Every time he sees the world, he has butterflies in his stomach, sweaty palms. That's what you're thinking. Now, you're thinking of romance, and you're thinking about when you were in high school and you wrote his name, your first name, his last name on your notebook 173 times, and you were all, you know, Twitter-pated, as Bambi would say. It's in the movie, Bambi. I don't remember who says it. Anyway, No. God doesn't, no. When God so loved the world, it's an action word, and he self-sacrificed. God so loved the world that what? He gave. What? His best, his only begotten son. Love looks like something. It's a verb. And it means to be self-sacrificial. Why, if I'm God, if I'm the most important, if everything's about me, if I'm a lover of self, why would I ever give anything? I get, I want, I receive. You owe me, I need, I want, I desire. Keep pouring it on. Me giving you, that's ridiculous. Without natural affection. Truce breakers. Is that something to keep the lawyers occupied? No, it means unforgiving. That's why I said I have these things right now, because you see truce breakers and you're thinking like the Paris Accords or Oslo Accords or some peace. No. That's true. I mean, there are countries that have set up, you know, peace accords and stuff and then not have kept them. But I don't think it's a sign of times. I think that's a sign of the whole history of the world. Unforgiving. That's what it means. Truce break. Unforgiving. You see unforgiving? Yeah. Now, when I was saying, you know, we could talk about them and what they do and all these horrible. Oh, wait a second. We talked about forgiveness at length. You remember? Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Listen, that can't be named among us. Some of these things are true of us. Okay? It's a sign of the times, but the problem is we are shaped very often by the signs. A lot of us have fallen prey to this, this sense of self-worth, and the whole world should evolve around me. And, you know, I don't have any affection. The only person I love are people who benefit me. Why should I love anybody else? Why should I care about anybody else? Why should I forgive anybody? Well, the reason why you should forgive is because God has said so. And I get this every time I talk about this practically. Someone will say to me, it'll happen this week sometime, well, they don't deserve. I always laugh, like, are you kidding me right now? I absolutely agree they don't deserve. Did you? When God forgave you of all your sin, did you deserve? Because I sure didn't deserve. It ain't question to deserve. And I get them, why off? Why should I let them off the hook? Because you're hooked to them. Step one in getting healthy and being made whole, forgive. And I've said this, and I just want to spend the whole time here. I got a lot to say. I always do on forgiveness. It's both a crisis and it's a ongoing. A crisis is a moment where I decide I'm going to forgive. But I still feel really bad about what happened. You know, do you realize what they did to me? I get that moment. I feel really lousy about it. And it's a progressive, ongoing, I keep choosing to, and to really turn the corner when I start praying for them, earnestly start praying for them. That's when I'm past it, when I'm not feeling the effects of the whatever it was that they did to me. Okay, where are we? False accusers. Accusing, Satan is the accuser of the brethren. Enough said. And it means slanderers. Have you ever been lied about? Now, we're going to talk Wednesday night. Happy are the harassed, okay? The last of the Beatitudes. It's got to do with, being picked on and persecuted. And men will say all manner of evil against you falsely. You think that's not fair. None of these things are fair. It ain't about fair. It's about that's going to happen. False accusers, slanderers. Your name is very, very important to you. Your reputation is very important to you. They don't care. Satan don't care about nothing. He don't care about truth. He don't care about where it really happened. He cares about just dragging your name through the mud. I hope when, the day I get accused of something publicly, I hope people who really love me will give me at least the benefit of the doubt. If it's not always the case. I've heard this. Oh, where there's smoke, there's fire. What? No, there's false accusations too. Let's keep moving. Incontinent. You think, you got to go buy them adult diaper things. It's like that. It's like that. No self-control is what it means. Incontinent, no self-control. And you think about the person who wakes up every day and they're trying to, feed the drug habit or some sort of addiction. Well, it could mean that. It just means you're out of control. In any venue. And it could be a substance. It could even be food. It could be anything. But it's just that you have no wherewithal to make the right choices. Well, that's not true. I mean, you always do. I've seen people like give up alcohol who weren't even Christians. People who drank a lot and just said, no, I'm coming to the place where it's not to be part of my life going forward. And just stopped. Wow. So don't tell me, like, if you're full of the Holy Spirit and you're born again, that you're out of control. Like, I hate that when people tell me that. I always think, like, I don't see that. I know things are difficult. I don't want to just, if you're, like, coming in the new year, say, I'm going to lose 20 pounds, okay? That's a silly little, but I understand how hard that is to change your lifestyle and change your exercise and your nutrition, and I get all that, right? But that out of control, no self-control stuff, it's not one of the fruits of Spirit, self-control. And we're talking about them hopefully, we're not talking about us, but I see us sometimes in some of these things. Next is fierce, fierce just means brutal or savage. Like, let's say you're riding a bus and you hear from Ukraine and somebody stabs you in the neck or something like that. Something like that. I'm just spitballing here, just coming up with some crazy thing that could never really happen here in America. Despisers of those that are good means despisers of those that are good. And why is this? Why do you get harassed? Why do people lie about you? Why do people persecute you? We're going to see, persecutions and afflictions, verse 11, 12, yea, and all that will of God in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. Why is that? Because they can't get to God. They hate him. We're going to see that they're not lovers of God in the end of verse 4, if I ever get there. And they can't attack him, so they attack you. You know, if people attack me, somebody smacks me on the right cheek, turned off from the other also, big deal. It's not the first time I've ever been struck. Oh, somebody attacks my family? Oh, my goodness. And you guys, you know, you just sit there, your blood can boil just thinking about it. No, it's really our Achilles heel. We'd do well never to get married, never to have kids, right? And we're 10 foot tall and bulletproof. What can you do to us? Nothing. But, you know, and the Lord's the same way. You attack his children, but he allows that sometimes. And he even allows it even unto death. And people are despisers of those that are good, and they're despisers of the good, and they're despisers of good things. Traitors means traitors, backstabbers, someone who won't keep their end of the bargain, who their friend one moment, next minute they're stabbing you in the back. Heady means headstrong, stubborn. See, that's one of those ones that doesn't really translate in the King James. You could read that and not really. Headstrong. Me and Tom were shopping last week, and we were talking about this. Why do people make choices that don't benefit them at all? And they're stuck in this gear that it's going to end badly, and if you talk to them about it, they know it's going to end badly, and even if they're pressing their, I'm going to do this, and that's all there is to it, and it's like watching a train wreck in slow motion. This is not, how can this possibly end good? It's not going to, but they're willful, they're heady, they're headstrong. They're just not going to be told otherwise. And I've always wondered about why people do this. I'm wondering, is that true of me? I hope it's not. You want to be have a person of character. Once you make a decision, it's a good determination, and God's in it, and you want to be a stick-to-it. You want to have that stick-to-itiveness that I'm going to see this through to the end. And that's a wonderful thing. But if I'm on a bad course of action, and I always tell the board this too, like if I make a bad choice, and you just sign off on it, you haven't done me any favors. If you say, Adam, that's probably the stupidest thing I've ever heard, I might have hurt feelings, but at the end of it, I would say, thanks. You saved me a whole bunch of hurt there. I really appreciate that. And I don't want to ever be headstrong to the point where I won't listen to anybody, especially reasonable people saying reasonable things. One of the signs of the times is people are headstrong. They just, this is the way it is, and I won't listen to anything else. High-minded here. If you're high-minded, that's good, right? No, haughty. You know, you think more highly of yourself, etc., etc. Lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. That's one word in the Greek. And it means lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. I have, it's hedonism, like it's all about pleasure and I want what I want and God doesn't really enter into the picture. I was talking to somebody, well, I can tell you, it was my granddaughter when she was in the hospital there before she, and some of you know, and I told her, I said, listen, going forward, you have to have a plan. It can't be about you. You can't wake up every day. And I would tell this to anybody in any situation. If your life is about you, reassess. Your life is about something really putrid. It's about, it can't end well. You have to have a reason to get out of bed. You have to have a goal. There's a God that I'm serving. I live for his pleasure. I live for my pleasure. That, listen, I love you enough to tell you this. That's going to end really, really, really bad. Anyone who's trying to always do what they want to do, and I'm not again, you know, you say, well, I got this hobby. I like to collect stamps. I don't care. Wonderful. Collect all the stamps in the world. At the end of the day, stamp collecting or any hobby is not, it's a nice little diversion if God's giving you. That's wonderful. If you play golf or you fish or you whatever, okay? I like to go for a ride on a Sunday afternoon. Great. If it's always, every day, what can I do to make me happy? You're living a miserable life. Set your goals higher. What can I do to make God happy? And that's the key to happiness, serving God. God will throw in joy in the package. He really, really will. If my goal is to please me, I'll always miss that goal, and there'll always be more, and I'll never be satisfied. If I try to please God, I'll always hit my goal, and I'll always be satisfied, and joy will be the natural byproduct. I know this. Listen, if I know anything, I know this, because I've tried to live for myself. Even after I got saved, I was I was a Christian. I'm in the club, right? I joined Team Jesus, and I really loved the Lord. I was really thankful for what he had done to me. But then, you know, it's still about me to a very large degree. And I'm trying to, like, please me, and I'm trying to live for self. What a fruitless, horrible existence that is, and there's never any joy involved, even if I get the thing that I'm trying to get. If you bought a new car, and it was like, oh, this is so fun. How long did that last? Not even a day. And then you were thinking, well, should I have got the other one? Or should I have jumped up to the sports model? Or, oh, the depreciation on this. And now I get all these payments. It's just things will never please. Service to God always pleases. You want to be a lover of self? Lover of pleasure, I mean, more than lover of God? That's a bad choice. But I see this inside the church a lot. I see this inside the church, and I see whole ministries dedicated to, it's all about you, sweetheart. Live your best life now. And I'm thinking, what an empty, you got a Bible in front of you. Maybe open it. Maybe teach out of it. Just an idea, okay? Crazy, I know. I'm just lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God. By the way, if you can keep in track, this is the 19th one. Having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. I don't want to be without God. They say, yeah, I think there is a God. I'm suspecting it might be me. But I can talk the God talk. I can say what I need to say while I'm in the church. But denying the power thereof. Okay, so when I was religious and I was growing up in the Catholic Church, I believed in God. I believed in the God of the Bible. I believed that God was the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. But I didn't know anything about power. I didn't even think he was powerful enough to save me. I had to be saved by doing religious activity. So I believed in God, but I, power? No, not really. And I think there's a lot of people who tell you know what I mean? Oh yeah, I believe in God. Like they're doing him a favor by acknowledging his existence. But he has no power in my life. He certainly has no authority. I mean, I understand there's out there some God, and maybe he's even the God of the Bible. But what claim does he have on me? None whatever. And that's them. Are we in the last days of these perilous times here? Well, judge for yourself. For of this, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. Now, I want you to establish a dialogue, says Paul to Timothy, never. Now, people want us to establish a dialogue. I'm ready to answer to give to every man an answer for the hope that lies in me. That's all the dialogue you're getting. Because the dialogue very, very often descends into an argument. We're not going to argue people into the kingdom of God. Now, sometimes they will say this, because they just do. They'll say an alternate thing, and we will godly give them an answer. And that's fine. Maybe they need that. Maybe they need to air out what the reticence is from getting saved. Maybe that has to be part of the process. I don't know. How far do you go in this discussion before it's just starting to get into name-calling? And by the time I'm getting a short fuse and I'm starting to get steamed and I get the veins sticking out of my forehead. We've gone way too far in this, okay? I want to talk to you about the things of the Lord. Oh, you don't care about the Lord. Oh, blasphemy. Huh? Okay, well, have a good day. I'm not putting the gloves on, not getting in the ring. Okay, just saying. We've talked about this a lot recently here. From such turn away. Well, isn't that just giving them no hope, no resource whatsoever? Shouldn't I have unchristian friends, you're saying? Yes. 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 You absolutely should do life together with non-Christians, people who are in this list. Why? Because you were and I was in this list, and God showed up and saved us. And I never say so super separation, don't ever speak to anybody. You find out they're a Christian, you say hello. If they're not a Christian, don't even bother with saying hello. I want it to be that much of super separation. I don't think that's what he's saying. Paul's the one going to all the different places all over the empire and trying to convert them to Christianity. He's not talking about any super separation. He's talking about doing life to the point where they're affecting his ministry more than he's affecting their life. And you don't say, you can see some of this. You say, what if I'm married to this person? I'm sorry. I'm sorry if you are. I'm not saying leave anybody, of course. But there's a separation. There has to be. I was this person. Well, it was about a week or two, but I was this person. I could say first. But she wasn't a blasphemer, and she's pretty angry about my conversion to the Lord without kind of including or involving her. But and I don't really know what it's like to live with somebody who's anti. I mean, that was never part of my situation. What are you going to do? You're not. It's not okay to divorce somebody because there's disagreements there. Sometimes you get married and you're both unbelievers, and one of you gets saved. What happens? Strain and stress and discord happens. But if I don't have to have someone in my life, and they always just blaspheme, and it's always about them, and they're into just how much they can have, and they're not thankful, they're not holy, how much of that person do I need in my life? Before I just say, yeah, okay, and I hold them away at arm's length, those people generally don't kind of want to be my bestie, because, they're haters of those who are good. Separate yourself from them. What does that mean in a very tangible way? That's one of those things I'll let you and God decide for you. I'm not the Holy Spirit, and I don't want to enter into that. I know what it means to me. I know that line that I have to draw and where I have to draw it. But I'm going to turn away. From this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts. What a statement. Reason I want to go away from them, you know what? They're creepy. They creep into houses. You know what I never worried about in my whole life ever? Somebody creeping into my house and leading away captive a silly woman who lived there laden with sins, because I was never married to a silly woman. But I want to tell you something. They still creep into houses, but they do it more stealthy. They do it on TV, they do it by radio, and they do it by being online. And they lead away silly women. There's got to be women? No. But I think he's talking about, you know how like Eve was deceived and Adam wasn't? Adam went into sin with his eyes wide open. There's a silliness here that agenda could lay. And I don't say that lightly, because I'm looking at a room full of sagacious women, and I don't. But I never worried about this because I'm not married to a silly woman. But I worry about this all the time because This is one of the things that keeps me up at night. Oh, really? What are you YouTubing? What are you watching? Who are you listening to? Who's speaking into your life? What are you holding on to as truth? What is... People believe in something. What do you believe in? Is it the Bible? Is it this book? Is it... No, this... And when it's talking about laden with sins, there's always been women laden with sins who want to be led away, and there's always guys who want to lead them away. But I don't think it's talking... Look, it's diverse lusts. So if we're just talking about lust, sexual passion, that's one thing. But I don't even think that's what it's talking about. Look at chapter 4, verse 3. The time's going to come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own, what words there? Lusts, shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. Again, think about YouTube. It's not that the teachers have itching ears. It's that I want to heap to myself people who will tell me what I want to hear. They creep right into my house, right over my phone, on my iPad, or over my television. They're creepy. I tell you, this keeps me up at night. I pray about this as much as I pray about many things in my life. Who are you listening to? Who is speaking truth into your life? Who is... Remember, we were talking about Wednesday night about the peacemakers. Have peace with God. And when you're having peace with God and he fills you up with the peace that passes all understanding, you're in a better place to speak peace to yourself and to speak peace to those who are at war with God. Or in other words, speak light into darkness. Right? What happened? God said, hey, light be. First thing he said, right? Light be. And now we know that we're created in God's image. What is that? We can speak light into existence? No, but we can take light and speak it into a dark situation. How are we going to do that? Well, we're creating God's image, right? What did he use? Well, he used his word. Hey, I got a great idea. Let's use his word to speak light into darkness. Right? Right? What else we got? Popular opinion. Hey, I know it's true. I saw it on CNN. This is what you need to know about this situation. And then I hang on to that as tenaciously as if it came from the burning bush. This is gospel in my eyes. I saw it on TV. And you know, they never lie. If it was on TV, they couldn't put it on TV if it weren't true. I'm mocking. Somebody actually, a grown-up, actually said it to me. Adam, it was on TV. You know it couldn't be on TV if it wasn't true. Now you know why I don't get into arguments. Bad Adam wanted to come to the service and I wanted to say all kinds of nasty things about his lack of gray matter, but I didn't, okay? And this was quite a while ago, nothing anything. When I say this and I leave the person's name out of it, there's always a reason. Don't you try to figure out who I'm talking about. It's usually nobody you ever know anyway. They have a form of godliness, they have power, turn away from them. They're creepy. They creep into houses and lead away silly women laden with sins, led with diverse lusts. They're ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. 66% of America do not believe in absolute truth. That's almost two-thirds. Two out of every three people you know do not believe in absolute truth. You certain of that? Absolutely, they'll tell you. That statement you just said, that there's no absolute truth, is that a true statement? Kind of funny. And then, of course, there you are with your feet planted firmly in midair. You have nothing except your objectivity to anchor you into oblivion, to nothing. You're not tethered to anything. I had a quote. Somebody reminded me. I'm not even going to get anywhere close to where I wanted to get today. But that's fine. That's fine. We will... Cliffhanger, we'll save it next time. Here it is. Francis Schaeffer said, I was a big Francis Schaeffer guy back in the day. He's a philosopher and just a good guy. Christian, modern man, having rejected God, finds himself in an absurd position. He believes he is nothing but the product of chance, yet he demands meaning, value, and purpose in a meaningless universe. That's funny, because I know a lot of just atheists will go around the world telling you there's no meaning. They find meaning in life telling you there's no meaning in life. Their purpose is to tell you there is no purpose. Ever learning, never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. And he gives us an example. Now, as Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses, so do these also resist the truth. Men of corrupt minds, reprobate concerning the faith. Who are Jannes and Jambres? They are the magicians who withstood Moses. And that's what he said. They withstood Moses. You remember when Moses was in a Pharaoh, let my people go, and his magicians, he threw down his rod and it became a snake. They threw down their rods and it became snakes. Saying, how did they do that? Because it was a miracle when Moses did it. I mean, they did it too? Yeah. Signs and wonders aren't always come from the hand of God. You mean Satan has the ability to deceive? Oh, my goodness. You don't have that figured out. You're going to go for a long ride in places where the signs of the supernatural just means supernatural stuff is happening. What's its origin? Who knows? But everyone always wants to make it of God. Well, how do you explain that, they said. I said, if physics can't explain it, I sure can't explain it. Doesn't mean it came from a good place. And I think a lot of people haven't figured that out. But they're just like Jannes and Jambres. So do these what? These perilous times people, these creepy people who come into women's houses and lead them away. But these shall proceed no further. The end's in sight. They're not going to get very far, is what the vernacular is saying. For their folly shall be manifest, made obvious unto all men, as theirs also was. So they turned the water into blood. The Nile River, they turned into blood. And, okay, look at our water. We're turning that into blood too. Well, if you really want to do something, turn it back into water. Just an idea. And I don't know how they get their card punched on that one anyway, right? Look at our waters turn. However, supernatural again. What's the next thing? Frogs. They made more frogs. Again, if you want to be awesome, take care of the frogs. Do away with them. And then it was the dust that was turned into lice, I think. And they said, this is the finger of God. We can't do that. They could proceed only so far. Well, these ones, they have an expiration date too. Death and then judgment. Everyone lives just once, and then they stand before God. It says we're given one life to live. I think it's Hebrews chapter 7, verse 28. You can check me on that. And then the judgment. We'll get a following, and we'll lead them all into perdition like we're going. And then it's going to be made obvious that we didn't have the truth. All right, so we have to end there. It's a horrible place to end, I know. But our time's spent, right? So I got to stop. I usually do better with my time, but this is kind of tough sledding. But we have to understand this, don't we? Is it going to be good times anytime soon? I think it's about as good as it's going to get for the next few years. What happens after that? We're one election away from horrible persecution. I see that so clearly in my own mind. I'm not a prophet. I'm not the son of a prophet, but I can read the writing on the wall. And I hope you see this, and I hope you say, yeah, boy, there's a whole lot of this around. This is the restrained good version. It's going to get worse. Brace for impact. It's perilous times. It's dangerous times. Is it going to be dangerous to be a Christian? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry if I woke you up this morning. I like to keep my head down. I like to think about my projects I got ahead of me, and I got this happening, and I got this going on ministry-wise, and me and my wife, we're doing this, and we got this planned on ahead. We're going to this place, and we're going to have a good time. And now I have to think about a lot of stuff that I don't really want to think about. We have to know. We have to know. And God says, okay. And last days, perilous times. Why does he tell us? Isn't he gracious? Because we have to know, and we have to take appropriate action. Here, we have to turn away. We have to, and we're going to find out some of the other things we're going to have to do. Hey, I can help you out a little bit. All scripture, verse 16, is given by inspiration of God, right? So part of this seeing through the subterfuge is knowing the truth. We have a truth reservoir. It's right in your lap, okay? I don't care if it's on your phone or actually in paper. It doesn't matter. You can take a walk around these. You don't have to go through the center of it.